world?
Yes, yes, but she was taken to Sweden afterward because she developed lung.
Tuberculosis?
Tuberculosis, yes. And she married a French doctor, but she could never, never step foot in our hometown or close by.
This girl who became a prostitute, yes, married the doctor?
Yeah.
What did they do with you while you were in...
In Lager? Yeah. In Auschwitz?
Yeah, did you just... did they have you do any work or any routine or...
No, no. We were just sitting and trying. Well, I tell you what, I shouldn't say no. You see, I really don't mind talking about it. But I was never, never the one after we came to this country to start talking about the concentration camp, because I couldn't have taken the remark, oh poor thing, how she suffered. And once somebody made a remark, maybe that left them a bitter taste, when somebody said to me, Hitler didn't do a good job. He really shouldn't have left. He shouldn't have killed just the 6 million. Okay? And that left a very bitter taste, and then a very big part of the Jewish immigrants, when they came out to this country, they thought that America owes them something. That America owes them a living or something, you know.
So they were very bitter and...
They were bitter. And my golly, I don't get any compensation from Lager, because my papers were late 6 days. I couldn't find my lawyer, he died. And for sickness, okay? And there are tons and tons of people who were never in the concentration camp and get money. So somehow I felt that what was, okay? And that is my sorrow inside. I talk about it. What good does it do to talk about it? And right now, it started the Holocaust Memorial. It's a beautiful, beautiful thing and a beautiful memorial, okay? It's a beautiful, but the anti-Semitism is planted so deep, that it opens just old wounds, because if they would have brought it in as a curriculum in school, right after. Beautiful thing. Beautiful thing. I hope that you youngsters, I told many times to my own daughter, I could never live to know, to see happening, what happened, and knowing that children, grandchildren, are hurt. I hope you youngsters will have the courage to fight back and know from what happened.
That's why we need this.
But honey, it is how many years after?
It's too long.
It's true, that is my only heartache. Otherwise, I would give my heart and soul to work with you, to help you. And I hope to God that Israel will survive. But anti-Semitism, as long as there is different religion, yes. Because no matter how liberal thinker you are, that will always be, because, I don't know, I guess I just want to hope that the time will come.
When the Mashiach will come, I don't know.
I don't know, help yourself.
Yeah,
and
that's important.
And God helps you too.
Yeah. But even in the case, there was no way to resist.
We really couldn't. Like, you know, the Warsaw Ghetto. We couldn't do that. First of all, I'm talking about the Hungarian Jews now, okay? In that ghetto, we were so few people. And the Polish people had so many years of the struggle. For instance, when we got, I forgot to tell you that, when we got in the concentration camp to Birkenau, to Auschwitz, the Polish girls were there already, okay? I was in 27, bed of 27. And Blokova was a girl from a Czech girl. Her name was Fanny. She had a young girl as a portraiter, as a helper. Her name was Dora. She was an 18-year-old girl. She was on the firing line for the Polish soldiers, for their lust, for their entertainment. As an 18-year-old girl, she was taken and had to live life like a whore the time she was 14. So sure enough that those people had a hatred towards us, because they used to call us verfluchte Magyarkas. While they were in camp, we were still home having water and soap, and they didn't. So that's why we could never have done what they did. Never, never. This is my personal opinion.
Well,
I'm just one.
But you didn't have the years and years of struggle.
That's why. Okay. So
you, do you remember the date you were taken from Auschwitz to leave there when the Russians were coming?
I don't remember exactly, but I know that for Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, we were still there because we got candles. And of course, none of us ate the food on Yom Kippur, but they had to go and bring the food. So the Polish people, the Polish girls, ate the food because they were already so hungry. And they had those wooden shoes, and they put the food in those wooden shoes. And those clunkies, and they ate it, and you couldn't take the food back, so you had it.
So you fasted on Yom Kippur,
absolutely, but we had to take the bread portion. Oh, absolutely. In fact, I have to tell you an incident, because this happens once in a million. We were in Zelager, and a couple of my friends from back home were in B-Lager. And B-Lager was a working lager. Girls went to work there. A-Lager was a working lager. B was a working lager. And C was a Vernichtungslager, where they took from when the selections were, they took it and you knew that you are going to go to the crematorium from there. So one day these girls worked in the kitchen, and these two girls' mother was in our, now let me remember it exactly, the mother was with us, okay, in the cellar, and the two girls were in B-lab, which was a working lab. The girls were taken for work more than in fancy ladder, okay? And there they had checked people, all sorts of people, and that it was known as a Czech ladder for Czechoslovakian. And one day, these two girls, I grew up with these two girls, okay? And my sister was there, as I told you, in Auschwitz. And by that time I had just one aunt left because the other one died of diarrhea. They couldn't eat the food. And one day these two girls came. They were bringing the food. How do you call those? Carly. And what they brought the food. You know what, my mind is so black now, I'm in another world.
Like a big kettle or something?
Kettle. And they poured it. It's my sister and me. That it's our life for their mother. They have to do it. They are going after everybody finishes the food. They are going to put their mother in one of the kettles.
Take her out?
And take her out to the sea lager, which was known as the chair lager. And we just have to take the consequences. They had to tell somebody because I had my aunt there. She was an elderly lady, a sick person. And being friends from home, they felt that they can trust her. So they said that they don't know how or when, but when something drastic will happen, we should know that the mother is safe in the other life. So, in fact, how many times you talk about this now? And they all remember this incident, but nobody knew why, what happened. So one day, we went out for Celapel, for the counting. And who below, we noticed that the excitement is big. C has one number minus, and B has one number plus. And everything but was thrown out from the barracks. No, the barracks had, I'm sure you heard by and you know, there were three
bunks,
okay. Everything was thrown out. And they took us to, no, that was afterwards. They counted and counted and counted and nothing happened. It was one minus and one plus. Then this Jewish girl I told you about it in the cellar there, okay? She started. and telling them Hungarian that what happened, that there is some trouble, there is one minus here, one plus there, and whoever is found that is dead, or the person, if nobody comes forward and tell them what happened, everybody will be thrown against the white fences. You know, the fences were electrically wired. And didn't work. Then we had to kneel on our knees for hours and hours because they checked and rechecked both lagers and raining. We were out for 24 hours and they didn't find it. By this time, you know, there were already women with weak nerves. You know, there is just so much you can take. And there were a couple of women who ran against the wiring fences, and they got electrocuted. So by that time, you know, it was more or less from the same barracks. But we never talked to these girls personally after that show. So we should stay together, just the four of us, okay? And we figured, okay, something must have happened, we don't know what. And we were in Bergen, Belgium. In Bergen, that's where I was liberated. And my sister had a typhoid fever, and I had typhoid fever, and we were very sick. And who below, who doesn't find us? These two girls with their mother found us. And that old lady nursed us back to hell because they could never, never forget what happened.
We saved their lives.
What happened? It wasn't us. It was their $2.
But you could have told. I mean, you knew. You could have told us both.
And my sister, when you asked me what I did in Telaga, actually were the two girls who saved their mother, not us, really. So they were the ones who found us
and helped you at the
and
end.
Nursed us back because both of us typhoid fever, and we didn't have food, and they brought every single day, not once and not twice, and stayed with us to feed us. And we pulled through. In fact, the lady is in Florida now.
The mother?
The mother lives in Florida. And the two girls, one is in Sweden, the other one is in Montreal, became a very famous cartoon for that. This is Barbara.
Why don't you tell me how you got from Auschwitz to Bergen-Belsen?
How do I get it? Now listen. There was a group of five of us. We met an elderly lady with her daughter from Miskolc. This was in Auschwitz, okay? And we got very close friends, so this lady became like one of our organizers. She had a daughter my age, It was my sister, her girlfriend, Zita, the one I told you about that had a cousin who didn't want to give her aspirin, and myself. And a loaf of bread was divided in five. So this old lady decided we would take the bread whole, a whole bread, not cut up, okay? And she's going to manage it, so we should have a little bit of food all day long. And she had a cousin who was the Lagerschreiberin of Seelager. She was from Felvedek. And who worked with the Lager couple and with the Germans. She just was lucky girl. The Lager couple was a rotten Polish girl. But when I say rotten, she was rotten. I get back to you. This is another chapter. And I don't remember her name already. Ilona Nini's cousin. This lady's name was Ilona Nini. And this cousin, I think was Eva or Lily. I don't remember. So she was a niece of this old lady. So when she found out that her aunt is here, she came to look her up. And she said, now don't worry. When I know that a group of people will be going directly to a factory, I'm going to let you know and push you in somehow, and I want you and Agnes, that was her cousin's name, I want you in that group. So Ilona Nini told us that when this, she told us what happened, and from then on, the five of us stood in one in back of each other, because there were five lines, five rows, where you stood in Celapel. So one day Ilona Nini came, that this girl, Lily, I guess it was Lily. I don't quote me exactly for her name, because I don't remember. But she was the Lagerschreiberin of Celapel.
Like a clerk, kind of.
Well, that's what it is. But she knew more or less what went on. She worked in the office, okay? And she came for the Celapel with Greze, who was the German SS Auserin, with the Lager couple, who was a Polish girl, and this Lily, because she had the paper, the numbers, which ballot, how many people. But she was a very nice girl, you know, and it was very hard over there to stay a human being, not to become an animal. And one day, Lily comes, that there is this group of people. Tomorrow morning, there will be the lineup, which is going to Hunsfeld. Okay, this was a factory place.
In Poland?
In Poland. And I want you in that group of people. So Ilona Nini told us, she said, I'm going to go and somehow come and get the two of you. So Ilona Nini said, oh no, we are five. So she gave her sort of an argument that she can't take five people. So Ilona Nini said, well, if you can't do it, then we are not going. I made a promise to myself, and I'm going to see these kids through with me. So Lily said, all I can do is look sideways and not see, and the rest is up to you then, okay? So, sure enough, how we made it, but we made it, Ilona really pushed us through. And we were happy that we are going to a factory and we will get out from there. And we, every group, before it got out from Auschwitz, had to go through bathing, new clothes. Okay? And we figured that now we are out from Tehlager, we are on the way to Ilager for a bath and clothes to get out. And ho below, we found ourselves in front of the crematorium. Something happened, and we were rerouted from Ilager to the crematorium. And we knew where we are going because, you know, we saw the smoke and everything. And we got there, and in front of the crematorium, we were still lined up. We were told to get undressed and go for a bath. And after we take our bath, we come out and get the clothes. Well, we knew very well what it is, but everybody was so... We were like a piece of iron, really. Nobody was hysterical. Nobody. I think we were about 250 people. And everybody started getting undressed, and this is it. And Ilona Nini said, apologized that she really meant good and what it is. And she still doesn't believe it because she was all her life, she was a religious woman. And she just can't believe it, that after getting into Auschwitz and going through so many selections by Mengele, that this will be her destination. And all of us were undressed and getting ready to go in, and all of a sudden an SS comes that stop, everybody gets dressed and go back. So we were taken back. And her niece came back and apologized. But they had a change of destiny for the group of people. But there is a saying that in 2 days, Hunsfeld still needs the people. So about a couple of 3 days after, it was through the microphone that the people who were in the group few days ago to line up. And we figured, well, this is it. We are going to the crematorium and there is nothing to talk about it. So we got ready and we were taken in the Ilager and given shoes and food and taken to Hunsfeld.
By train? About trucks or something?
No. I think it was by train. I think so. So in Hunsfeld, this was already, I think, the last before there was another group of people left in Auschwitz. In Tehlager, let me put it that way, okay? In Tehlager. So we got to Hunsfeld. It was winter already. And we went to the factory and worked.
What kind of a factory was it?
What kind of a factory? We made, how do you call what you use for a shotgun?
The bullets?
Bullets. We made a bullet. But in the meantime, we lived in in a soldier, in brick homes, okay? Like apartments.
Mm-hmm.
But the hall had a bathroom and a regular toilet. So we could already keep ourselves clean. And it was a tremendous big, it was like a military camp, like an army camp.
Were there soldiers there?
No.
They were gone?
No, they were just us prisoners.
All women?
Yes, displaced persons. just went up. That's a factory, was a tremendous, huge factory, and it was under the SS, because we were counted every morning when we went out, and we were counted when we came back. So after we came back, how many times the girls tried to go in the cellar to steal potatoes, so we should have a little baked potato or something. And whenever they sent me, they always caught me because I couldn't steal. So my sister said that, oh my God, you can't even do this much. So you better, but if they left me home watching the potatoes, for sure, that's when we had a checkup by the Nazis and they caught me with the potatoes. So anyway, and after the Russians started getting close to Hunsfeld.
Do you know where it was near? Was it near any big city or anything?
No, I don't. I really don't. No, I don't. I don't know. All I know is that after the Russians started getting closer and we started seeing the Stalin, they used to call it Stalin candles thrown.
The artillery?
Yes, something. We knew that they are going to move us. So sure enough, they lined us up, and from then on, we went by feet. We went from Hunsfeld to Gross Rosen. Stayed in Gross Rosen further. Whenever the Russians got close or closer, we were taken. It was Gross Rosen, Mauthausen. This was done by Ford, and it was winter. It was cold, and we begged this old lady to leave us alone. We want to die. We just can't take it.
This was the older woman who kind of
took care of
this.
We still were together, the five of us. And I'll never forget it. One night I had a dream that I dreamt with my mother, and my mother made a remark, I shouldn't worry. She is with us. And we will make it. We will survive the camp. Just, we have to be strong, both of us. And I woke up and I told my sister what a dream I had. And my sister said, I had always a very strong faith. My belief was always very, very, very strong. And I told my sister, I always had more feeling toward religion than my sister. My sister was, I was a Zionist too, but she inclined more towards the leftist liberal party, Zionism. And me, being the youngest, somehow, I was just, my faith, you couldn't do anything, because this is what I believe in. And we love dearly, dearly our parents. And I figured that I'm a good Jew. And it just can't happen to us. We are the chosen people, and it just has to something. And from then on, my belief was so strong that we will make it. And my sister started crying. It was somewhere outside on the top of a mountain, and the SS guys were in the tavern drinking, and we were left outside. And my sister is older, 8.5 years than I am. And she kept begging, to please leave me here, let me die. I just can't go on. I haven't got the will. I just can't take it anymore. So this old lady brought her out that she's a few years older than she is, and if she can make it, you will make it. and we will be liberated, and you come to my place, and I nurse you back, and so anyway, we made it
to Bergen-Belsen,
which was half. The Germans were treating us, because by that time, you know, they were getting weaker and weaker. And we got a typhoid fever.
While you were there, you got sick?
Yes. And I was deaf. It affected my ear. And my sister, and we spoke English from home. We learned English.
British
English, and that was an entirely a different English than the American English. And the girls, the group of people who we were together, noticed, and we noticed that something is going on, because the food didn't come on time, and the loudspeakers were talking in English. So a few girls from my hometown came to us, and they said, "Clara and Irene, you understand English. Go and listen, because they keep saying something over the microphone, and it was food. And we don't know what." We were so deaf. I just couldn't make it out. So my sister and Ilona Nini decided that it must be the food. We are not going to touch the food. By this time, her daughter was so weak already, had diarrhea. And Ilona Nini was so sick from diarrhea that Agi, to her daughter, just one person. Her crazy. Absolutely crazy. She lost her mind. But so bad that the Germans took her away. So we lost. We lost her daughter. And it had a terrible effect on us. But we were sick, okay? And these, we got a hold of these girls I told you about, okay? They brought us food. And we didn't know what happened with Ilona Nini. Because Ilona Nini was put in another barrack. And we were looking for Ilona Nini with the food to come to our place, because by that time the girls found us. And they started bringing us food. And we were still weak, very weak, but I went looking for them. And I couldn't find Ilona Nini. By the time I found Ilona Nini, Aggie was gone, her daughter was gone. So we dragged Ilona Nini with us to come to our barrack and have some food, but she couldn't stay there for the night because we were still counted, you know, so during the day. And we lost Ilona Nini. She couldn't take it anymore, so she died. And the next day, the English came. Ilona Nini died the day before. And the English people came in and started announcing it. No food, no food, no food. So when the girls told us what they say in English, no food, that we could, okay, fine, don't touch the food. Because the food was poisoned.
The Germans poisoned
yes.
it before they left?
Yes, the Germans poisoned the food. And all of a sudden we saw that the German SS women were cleaning the toilets instead of us Jews. So we knew that we got rid of them. How safe or what, we still didn't know. And then we just noticed that the big posters were posted. Do not touch food. 24 hours, no food. No food, no water. We will bring you everything. And then they started bringing the food, the kettle, potato, meat, and gravy. And my sister wouldn't let me eat anything. She picked up out a couple of potatoes and mashed it because she was afraid of the diarrhea for not eating for so many days, you know. And we were between the very, very few people who didn't have diarrhea. Because, you know, they started bringing ham and jelly and bread and can of Spam. Golly. I'll never forget that. And we just had to look at it. I had to look at it. And my sister wouldn't let me open one can of food.
Till you started?
Till we started eating. And we were saved by the English, liberated by the English. And then they started taking us to Chile, which is a little town not too far from Hanover. But before we got to, we were liberated already. So then they went us and took us to Chile. And in Chile, it was English people. It was like an army camp. It must have been a stable for horses before, because it still smelled when we went in, but it was clean. And the place had a hospital, so the weak people could get into the hospital, and what they were taking care of the English people. In fact, this English girl, I think she was the daughter of General Montgomery. And they were very strict, very strict, but very nice people. So we were already in good hands. And at that time, I still spoke French. And the camp had a French, as a director, a French guy. And they were looking for somebody who can speak French and can translate it. So I went and told them that I still speak French. And I worked with him as a translator. And the food was very good. And we were safe. And one day, when the director wasn't on the premises, I helped in the hospital kitchen to make sandwiches because at 4 o'clock it was tea time, so they had to get some food. And one day while I was in the kitchen, an old woman comes in red, begging for food. And something on her eye was so on her face was so familiar to me. The sight was so familiar. But I didn't pay any attention. And of course, when she spoke German, we didn't give her any food. We just let her go out. And in the afternoon, and somehow the woman looked so sneaky, you know, like she was afraid. But listen, we were so happy. It was after in a clean place and food and clean clothes and everything. Didn't pay too much attention. And in the afternoon, the director comes back, and my God, there is a news bulletin out that the German SS Hauser in Grace is hiding somewhere around here in rags, hungry, torn, no shoes, no nothing. And I got to my head, said, oh my God, she wasn't here. And something was so so familiar, but I didn't know what it was. And the camp was searched and searched and searched, and they didn't find it. And boy,